Well, Ontario's ombudsman did not hold back. He was describing Ontario's Lottery Corporation, and these are some of the phrases he used. State of denial, fixated on profit, a clumsy, unfeeling Goliath of a corporation. This is a corporate culture André Marin says must change, and our guest knows a thing or two about overhauling corporate culture. Richard LeBlanc is a professor of corporate governance at York University's Atkinson Faculty. Welcome to Ontario Today.
Hi, thank you.
I know you're not an expert on, let's say, the Lottery Corporation per se, but how do you assess their corporate culture?
Well, I think, as you said at the beginning, it really starts at the top, and part of my research is studying audit committees and boards that have failed with multi-million dollar meltdowns, as well as some of the best audit committees in Canada and internationally as well. And you hit the nail bang on the head at the beginning. It really does start at the top, and the tone that the audit committee sets, risk management, internal controls, a strong internal audit department, and a culture that is proactive and understands the risks with a code of conduct, a proper board mandate, proper audit committee responsibilities. And the best companies internationally are really holding themselves to account at the board level. I looked at the website, and the 9 points for the audit, for the OLG, for the board mandate, I found to be substandard. The audit committee responsibilities were 6 lines in length, and this certainly, I would deem this on a scale of 1 to 10 to probably rank about a 2 or a 3 compared to best practice companies. And I'm not suggesting by any means that this is reflective of the board, but based on external disclosure, I think that some questions legitimately need to be asked, and were asked by the ombudsman yesterday, which I found quite shocking, because you'd like to think that with the risks that this type of company is exposed to, including cash transactions and physical risks, that you'd have proper internal controls over inventory, information technology, segregation of assets, duties, self-dealing, etc., and that appears not to have been the case based on the ombudsman's report and as near as I can see.
It's interesting because someone in your field, obviously, this whole thing would be such a source of fascination for you, really, to get inside to figure out how it all worked.
Well, it is, and what I do find is that the private sector, in some respects, is really ahead of the public sector in holding themselves to account and having proper oversight by the audit committee of key risks, a risk profile, risk appetite, and really cross-examining management and asking the right questions on what the internal controls are, given the nature of the risks that any company is accustomed to.
It's interesting that you refer to the audit committee, the board. You didn't say the CEO.
Well, the number one job of the board is to hire, fire, and compensate the CEO, and the selection of the CEO, and as you know, the CEO was fired yesterday, really sets the ethical tone for the corporation in terms of what the board is prepared to accept or not accept.
Mm-hmm. And that's why then this role of the board of directors is actually so important.
Correct, as well as the selection of directors. What I had recommended to the Ontario Security Commission a few years ago is that directors be selected on the basis of competencies and skills that's aligned with the strategy of the company. And I think increasingly Crown corporations are coming to the realization that they need to select directors more carefully and align that selection not on the basis of patronage or prerogative, and I'm not suggesting this is the case here, but on the competencies and skills of individual directors, how they're brought onto the board and how they're assessed and how they're retired from the board.
Well, how much influence can a board of directors have on a corporation's day-to-day operations?
Tremendous. They do not run the company, but they oversee the running of the company, and the tone at the top that they set and the questions that they ask of management and the procedures and policies have a profound effect on a company. And as I said, I've assessed audit committee chairs that have single-handedly turned around a company by stepping up to the plate, exercising leadership, and asking the right questions and demanding the right answers. So an audit committee can have a significant effect as an organism of the board on the oversight of management.
How much of this is changing over the years? You made the reference of, you know, a lot of people might be thinking of stories about boards, that it's kind of a hands-off thing. You have your meetings. You don't interfere and meddle with the day-to-day operations. Is this actually kind of a shift in thinking?
It has been, and I think since Sarbanes-Oxley in 2002, there really has been, as I say in my book, a revolutionary change, because boards now have changed dramatically, and the practice of a directorship has changed. And I'm not suggesting by any means that boards should be overly active in running the company. They don't. But boards are far more engaged now than they were even 3 and 4 years ago, and continue to be.
So a little bit of pushback, in a sense, to the managers at those senior levels. If the Ontario Lottery Gaming Corporation would ask, would you have any advice?
Well, based on what I've seen and read, there really needs to be a rethinking of this. There's a report from KPMG, a report from the ombudsperson, and the public trust is at issue here, that the government of Ontario really needs to ensure that the public trust is maintained and that all of the recommendations are appropriately dealt with and are implemented, in fact, and are being held to account.
All right, Mr. LeBlanc, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Richard LeBlanc is a professor of corporate governance at the Atkinson Faculty of Professional Studies at York University in Toronto.